pensando, no?
Hi, ladies and gents. Evening to all of you, and welcome to the latest Trinity Times podcast. My name is James Forrest. I'm the writer and editor at the Celtic blog, and I'm joined tonight, as ever, by my colleagues Eric Knott of Read Celtic and Joe McHugh of Video Celts. We have loads to discuss tonight, and we're going to start, as ever, with the game yesterday. So, Brendan has now achieved another of his goals. He's got us through to Hampden yet again, where he's never lost a game. To me, that pretty much puts the Scottish Cup in the bag. Without getting overexcited, Brendan's record at Hampden is so good because it's one of the grounds where teams cannot come and sit back and play defensive football. They cannot waste time. They cannot do what they usually do when they play us in the league and try and hold out for a point. When you're at Hampden, your fans expect you to at least show up and try and win the game. And that's why we are so successful there, because teams who try and do that against us get caught and get bested by a better team and a better manager. And Rodgers' record there is probably as good as any that I've heard. Somebody said yesterday on the TV that he's now gone 20 Scottish Cup games without defeat, but his record at Hampden must be pretty near that as well. So yesterday's performance, playing the second best team in the country, and we made them look like just another team. I thought it was very professional. It was very disciplined. Rodgers has drilled this team so well now that there was never going to be a repeat of what happened at Easter Road. Easter Road's clearly, when you look at it now, a case of the post-Bayern blues. But we seem to have gotten past that. And another good performance. Another good goal from Maeda. A goal from Adam Ida. I'm sure you guys are going to want to talk about him. And yes, it's a very successful weekend. I'm going to let Joe speak first and then Eric on it. Mr. McHugh, yes. The floor is yours.
I would hold fire in counting and winning the Scottish Cup. There's a thing in Scottish football called VAR. It's kind of unpredictable.
We'll get into that.
So, not only have you got the match, the man in black or red or amber or whatever on the park, you've also got two of his pals sitting in the studio going out of their way to try and avoid giving Celtic goals that are legitimately scored. So they're probably about 75-80% of the way to winning the Scottish Cup. I would hope that they get Aberdeen or Hearts in the draw. We're quite happy with that. That would be more of a focus and more of an occasion. I'll not have any complaints with St Johnstone. I hope it's not Livingston. I heard a little bit of David Martindale today, and I don't want to hear him again. I mean, you realise how much your life is better not having his snivelling little self-pitying voice babbling away about how poor Livingston are and how the world's against them and all sorts of things, and what a decent wee humble guy he is. He's not. He's a bad, bad man. On our front, it was all very competent yesterday. There was no excitement. It didn't particularly feel like a cup tie. The big build-up sort of fell flat in its face. Hibs had virtually no attacking intent. I think they were delighted that they were 1-0 down after 90 minutes. That's a result in most terms for teams visiting Celtic Park. It's a bit unusual. It's not much cop for you in a cup tie. But Celtic did what they had to do. Probably the bit that summed it up was when Hatate got a bit of space late on and everybody's expecting a searing ball through to Maeda, including Maeda, who was setting off on it. And Hatate just turned around, put it square in the midfield, and Celtic just retained possession. So it's a bit of a strange one for Celtic supporters to get used to, playing possession and playing percentages. But it worked, and we got the goals. Pre-match, I was just talking there to Eric about Celtic knocked Hibs for six. I don't think Hibs held Celtic very well. They had their goalkeeper maybe made two exceptional saves, maybe two or three other saves. So it wasn't as if Hibs contained Celtic. On another day, that would have been the expected 4-0 that tends to be the norm for most matches at Celtic Park. So I think, I was going to say, the defence did well, but defence never had too much to do. But they had lost two goals away to St Mirren last week and looked a bit ropey and under pressure. And they'd lost two goals away to Hibs the week before. So defence looks, maybe the midfield's guarding them better, doing a better job. But the game was at home, whereas the St Mirren and Hibs games were away from home. But it was competent, it was good, it was job done. It was good. They had a week's training, a week's preparation. They didn't look anything special or better for it, but they're probably getting into a rhythm. There's an important match coming up next Sunday, and I think they're bubbling along quite nicely, and they're all capable of raising their game 5-10% next Sunday, and that could make things interesting. So mission accomplished and all that, blah, 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 into the hat for the next round, on to Hampden, and we have a great supporter at Hampden. I'm not sure if Aberdeen or Hearts can sell out half of Hampden. I'm trying to remember what Aberdeen sold for the semi-final last season. But there were a big Celtic support there. And it's strange, a decade ago, Hampden was a bit of a bogey ground. It's anything but. But
that's right.
We're coming up for the anniversary of Josh Meekings. And funnily enough, Alan Muir's still in the news a decade later. But that's enough from me. I'll pass over to Eric for his verdict on Sunday's cup tie.
Yeah, I mean, I'd echo your sentiments very much, Joe, in terms of it was all fairly pedestrian, you know. I think it was a case of just get the job done, and we got the job done. And it was a solid performance, but I don't think the players are really pushing themselves to any extent, because I think they have next weekend in mind. And I don't think they were ever put in a position where they had to push themselves. They weren't really pressurized. And I mean, I don't know if you guys noticed, but I felt that Riho Tate was his usual slack self with some of his passing and some of his movement. But obviously he got that shot in, that Jordan Smith did that fantastic save too. And you know, he was sort of probably a 5 or 6 for me. But the standout performance are the guy who just seems to be, you know, fitting into his role seamlessly and just does not look out of place is Jeffrey Schlupp. He's really, you know, he's really starting to make the left back position his own. And it is evident that it's a step up from Greg Taylor. That's no offense to Greg Taylor, who has done a great job in that role for the you know, 5-6 years he's been there. But Jeffrey Schlupp is just another level above. And I think even looking at his performance, while it wasn't spectacular yesterday, it was still rock solid. And that's what you want in a left back. You want that kind of dependability. And then obviously, I mean, we have Alistair Johnston on the right, so we're very, you know, capably covered in those two areas now at the moment. And I think the club really should be looking at signing Jeffrey Schlupp on even a year or two contract, you know, to put him in there as a backup for Kieran Tierney when Kieran Tierney comes in, because that would be really mean the left back position is sewn up, you know, and it's a position that we've talked about many times on the show. Yep. And I think that if we had Jeffrey Schlupp and Kieran Tierney there, that would really make it rock solid for the season ahead, you know, for the next season. But in terms of the game overall, I think Dyson Maeda is just, I mean, he's in that central attacking role. He's just unstoppable at the moment. He's definitely, with the amount of games we have left to play, there's another 10 goals in him if he keeps going the way he is. So you're probably looking mid-30s. He could probably finish mid-30s the way he's going. And he seems to have mastered that poacher role, you know, where he's able to get in there and poach goals. And sometimes when he was on the left wing, that would have been those I know he had that chance that he missed very close, you know, the ball that came in really across the face of the goal and he slid in and he just put it wide. I know he missed that one, but the thing is, he gets the chances now and he's taking them. He might not be taking 2 or 3 of them, but he's taking one and he's guaranteeing a goal. So I think his you know, I did an article during the week there where I said Kyogre must be kind of looking on and wondering, you know, how well or how seamless the transition has been to Maeda going into the position that he used to play in, and how he's just started banging in the goal since he did. It's just like Deyzin Maeda was just waiting to move into that role. And it's, I mean, for next season, as long as we don't get any super duper bids in the summer and that the board can't resist, if we have him playing in that role up on the central attack, I mean, I think he could probably be another 30 plus goal, you know, man for next season. And I think Champions League, that's the way to go. But we do need to bring in another striker next season or for next season, you know, to have somebody who's going to be the third choice, but somebody that we can have there. But as the game, I mean, the game itself yesterday, yeah, it was a pedestrian affair. It was job done, nothing spectacular. The atmosphere was good, crowd was good. You know, it was nice to see 7,000 Hib fans there, and the fact that they brought their full allocation. And the last time we saw that amount of fans inside in Celtic Park was when 2018, I'd say, when the Huns came to town after they threw a strop from the March game. It would have been April of 2018, wouldn't it? Yeah. So look, I think everybody was fairly solid in the game. We got the results. We're going to Hampden, and as James said, our record in Hampden is second to none at the moment. You know, Brendan Rodgers, he just seems to know how to beat teams in Hampden. He seems to know how to use the space in Hampden, and I would be very surprised if we didn't make the Scottish Cup final after this. Hibs, as we've all alluded to, are the second best team in the country at the moment. We probably expected a bit more of a challenge from them. It didn't materialise yesterday. And only for Jordan Smith, as Joe and myself, when we were discussing before we came live, only for Jordan Smith, it could have been, as Joe said, a 4-0 standard score that we expected Celtic Park. I'm happy with the result, and I'm happy that we're on to Hampden. And I reckon, like Joe said, get Aberdeen or, you know, not Livingston anyway. God, no. I definitely don't want Livingston. I know we'd probably hammer them off the park, but it would be a bore fest with them playing there. And David Martindale and his style of play is just, it's diabolical. So it's not something we want to see. So, yeah, hopefully somebody like Aberdeen or who's left in, who are the teams now remaining outside of
Livingston or St. Johnston.
Yeah. So, and Aberdeen, yeah. So, yeah, hopefully Aberdeen or St. Johnston, definitely not Livingston anyway. That's my synopsis on the game. Pedestrian. Run of the mill, job done.
Well, you can say pedestrian, but I prefer to think that it's just a very disciplined, very composed, professional performance. It's just get the job done, get out. And that's how Rodgers has got it set up for most games now. It's funny though, right? You mentioned, one of the guys in the comments mentioned Arne Engels, who I thought was tremendous again. Right. One of the things that I'm enjoying watching about him right now is that he has slotted seamlessly into the McGregor role. When McGregor's gone off or whatever, right, or when McGregor moves up the pitch. Joe, you said something about us guarding the defence better. I think that might be part of it. I think Engels' role has slightly changed a wee bit, and he's playing a wee bit further back, and he's playing a mere... He's helping McGregor out more rather than pushing too far up the pitch. Eric, though, you mentioned Maeda and the prospect of him playing through the middle again next season. Now, this is not what Rodgers wanted to have to do. But Rodgers is a pragmatic guy, and I wonder if the plan for the summer hasn't changed on the back of how well Maeda's done. I think instead of going out and signing some big fancy name as a striker, that we might go with somebody, as you said, who's more of a backup to the two front guys we have right now. And that he might continue playing Maeda through the front through the middle. Because the question Rodgers has got to ask himself now is it easier to replace Maeda on the left or to buy a striker who's better than Maeda played through the middle? And I don't know who that would be. I genuinely don't know who that would be. With a guy like Chris Gardner, whomever, you're taking a punt, basically. But Maeda, you know what he's going to do. You know what he can provide.
Yeah.
So I think maybe the plan has changed slightly. What about that, Joe? What do you think of that? You think the manager's thinking on this has altered a bit?
Yep, Maeda is not a stopgap or a short-term solution because Kyogo's gone. Right, so it's fairly obvious that Maeda's first choice, Adam Ida's second choice. I think it's also fairly obvious Johnny Kenny will not be third choice. He would be getting some minutes if Rodgers truly believed in him. And what we've learned that Doncaster and St Mirren were both close to getting them on loan until Celtic failed to bring in another striker. So, yeah, I think things have changed. So, and just you're talking about Ingles. There's debate about who's the player of the year. Arnie Ingles ought to win the Young Player of the Year every award in Scotland by a mile. There's not many young players playing in Scotland. Lennon Miller's possibly the home based competition, but he's had a bit of time out injured, and I'm sure he'd admit that he's not at the Arnie Ingles level. So I think you've got to be qualified to play under 21 football to be Young Player of the Year. So they could give it to him just now. He might also be not far away from a nomination for the full Player of the Year. But on your question of the striker, there's always a prospect of Celtic looking to sell someone. That has been known in the past, but I think one player will be sold in the summer. Hopefully it's only one. If it's more than one, we've got problems. But as it stands, starting next season, you would have Maeda as your first choice striker. As you said, we are not in our price range, we're not going to get someone better than him.
Yeah.
So I'm with that. So I guess Eric's nodding in agreement as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm just looking at Plunge McNugget's comments here. You know, he's saying, and I just want to say hello to Tommy55 as well. He's a loyal follower of my blog. I don't know if he follows you guys, but he's always following my blog. And and to be fair, he's followed he's always commented on the podcast for us as well. But Plunge McNugget is saying, guys, our domination is over. Sadly, what are we going to do? Thanks for coming. So I think that's a subject I discussed today, that there's an awful lot of, you know, this patter going around that we're terrified of this takeover. And I, for one, welcome it, because I think, or I hope that, and we've discussed this many times on the podcast, that the board's MO is to just keep the Ibrox side at arm's length. But if there's serious investment goes on and these guys are seriously professional about doing the job right at Ibrox, well, then we're going to have to spend to stay ahead.
Yeah.
So
that's the worst case scenario, isn't it? That our board has to up our game a bit.
They have to up our game. Exactly. So, I mean, we need to sort of, I said today in an article, like, there's going to be two default positions on it from the board. It's either a case of let's invest for Europe and at the same time pull ahead and, you know, put them out of sight again. Or, which I probably expect to happen, the board will look at it and say, let's observe what happens and make our movements based on those observations. So it's hard to know what way it will go, but surely, and we've said this many times, they have to realize that the cash go that Europe is. And after this season, especially in the Champions League, they know the potential earnings that we can get there. We only get 3.5 million for winning a treble. Now, obviously, it's a necessity in order to set us up for Europe and for the Champions League, and that's got to be our bread and butter. But we really have to be looking towards Europe, I think, anyway, you know. And to do that, going back to the conversation about a striker, we do need to get a backup striker. But, like you said, I think Brendan was forced into doing what he has done with Maeda. You're correct in what you said. He didn't want to do it. But it is reaping the rewards now, and it's clear that Maeda... I mean, I think we knew it all along anyway from his Japanese... you know, his role with Japan and also his role in Ange's team when he played for Yokohama F. Marinos. He was the central attacker there, you know. So he's more than capable of it, and he's clearly shown that.
Yep, definitely. Right, guys. We're going to move on to one of the big subjects of the last week. And I know we covered it in miniature sort of last week. But this week we got the VAR audio. The Alan Muir decision at Easter Road. And I don't know how you guys felt about it. Well, I kind of suspect I know how you guys felt about it. But for me, it raised a whole new set of questions because it's terrible. I mean, there is no way to sugarcoat it. It's absolutely abysmal. It sounds like a guy who had made his mind up before he saw a bit of footage and just decided that he was going to find a pretext under which to disallow the goal. I listened to Willie Colum, and I thought that everything he said was basically disingenuous bollocks. He's sitting there and he's trying to explain to us what the rule is. We all know what the rule is. We don't need Willie Colum to confirm what we already knew. And our Scottish media isn't the best in the world. We all know that. Their sports media is abysmal at what it does. But even they all knew the rule on the day. And they all agreed on the day that this is a travesty of decision. But to actually hear the audio and realize that Muir had made his mind up and that the next minute was just an attempt by him. He bounced his assistant VAR into agreeing with the decision he'd already made. That was astonishing. I did not expect to be so pissed off when I found out what actually went down. A couple of the other blogs said this week that his position is untenable. I completely agree. I don't know why your club isn't screaming that for the rooftops. I certainly hope they're saying it in the background and in private, because there's no way that that can be... There's no way to justify that. There's no way to explain it away. His comments make it clear what his agenda was. And for Colum to come out and say, you see that the officials make up their mind when they look at the third angle, is shit, I'm sorry. It's obvious that Muir made up his mind before he even saw the first angle. He's straight away out the gate. He's trying to tell his assistant VAR. That ball's it, and the assistant VAR's saying, no, it isn't. You can't, that's inconclusive. You can't say that. And then he makes a second attempt to get his assistant VAR on board. And then a third attempt, where I think his assistant VAR's like, aye, all right, whatever you want, mate, whatever you want, boss. So I don't know how you guys felt about it, but I don't think that Colum did a very good job of defending him. He tried to obfuscate and blow some smoke, but ultimately, we can only judge this based on what we actually heard and what we actually saw when we checked the transcript. And Muir's banking rights here, so I don't know how he slithers off the hook. Joe, what about you?
I agree with most of that, but this has been brewing for 10 years. We got to hear the Alan Muir audio. If only there was audio from the 2015 semi-final against Inverness Cali Thistle.
Yeah, we may not be here if that had been the case.
Yeah,
we may not be in this position when we're talking about this guy all these years on.
So Celtic's quiet lobbying behind the scenes and pushing for higher standards is just absolute nonsense. Celtic will take and accept absolutely anything from the SFA, because basically Celtic are strong enough to withstand it, and 9 times out of 10 or 99 times out of 100, they'll still come out and talk. But if we'd get that point or went on to win against Hibs, we could be winning the league against Hearts in the game after the split, rather than waiting on variables about the other lot playing against Dundee and then Hibs. So there's one obvious consequence of it. But the audio was as bad as it could possibly be. There was no wriggle room. He didn't just make a small mistake or overlook something. He was absolutely determined on it. And in a lot of these situations, it's not the actual crime. It's not quite a crime, but it's not the crime that's a problem. It's a cover-up. And Willie Colum never offered any explanation for why Alan Muir acted like that. He didn't give us any explanation about what he spoke to. I assume he spoke with Alan Muir about it. I assume he's discussed it with Alan Muir. I don't think they ever apologise. They'll just explain that they got something wrong, but they'll never apologise. But there is no obvious consequences for Alan Muir. We're left to wait on the SFA website on a Tuesday morning and scan through to see if he's on duty that weekend. So he missed a midweek SPFL card, he missed a weekend SPFL card, then he missed out on 4 Scottish Cup ties. So when you've only got 3 full-time VAR officials and one of them is being blackballed, you've got a problem. But unfortunately, and I am a broken record on this, but the Celtic board allow this to happen. Alan Muir should have been drummed out of football along with Stephen McLean. And I can remember, I'll need to search for it, but it was season 2014-15 that the Inverness Calathistle semi-final was. The following season, there was a game at Motherwell, and I've got some recollection that Nadir Sifsi was playing for us. But there was two ridiculous handballs in that game that should have been penalties. Alan Muir's the referee, and we never got them. Brendan Rodgers has only lost one cup tie as Celtic manager, and that was at Kilmarnock last season. And guess who was referee? Alan Muir. In that game at Kilmarnock, Kilmarnock scored their only goal of the game when Celtic were down to 10 men. Greg Taylor was off getting treatment after getting an elbow in the ear from Danny Armstrong. No action taken against Danny Armstrong. I think Celtic got a free kick, but it was clear violent conduct. It knocked Taylor out, and the Kilmarnock goal came from that side of the park. Late on, Haksabanovic should have been awarded a penalty. Al Muir didn't want to know. Don Robertson and VAR didn't want to know. So that's what you get when you've got Alan Muir. So it's great that we've got evidence. So anyone saying the old nonsense about Celtic supporters being paranoid. Not paranoid enough, because that was not a one-off. That wasn't the first time that Alan Muir had went out of his way to harm the team that he detests. And also, he's been equally guilty with the other lot helping them out. I remember a Kilmarnock Scottish Cup replay. It was a game Steve Clark went a bit tonto afterwards. But there's some outrageous decision that match. So it's great we've got the evidence. We are not paranoid. We were denied a good goal for no obvious reason. The full-time SFA VAR official, who should know the rules off by heart, was hell-bent in disallowing that goal. He could have done other things a bit more subtle, but clearly at 2-1 in the 83rd minute, he was getting a bit concerned that Celtic could score a goal and possibly go on and win the match. So we'll wait. I think it'll be a long wait, because I don't suspect the SFA are going to say anything. I don't expect Michael Nicholson to come out of hibernation to say anything. So we'll just need to play this game by game, week by week, see what happens. But one other aspect of it is there was two full-time VAR officials until the summer. Willie Colm is head of refereeing. He appointed Alan Muir as a full-time VAR. So this is also on Colm. So hopefully I've left some room for Eric to throw in some comments.
Yeah. Untenable is the word. And under any normal circumstances, if a referee behaved like that, his position should be untenable and he should be shown the door. Like, as with James, I was shocked when I heard the audio. And the attempt at coercion to get the assistant VAR to agree with his decision, it was just blatant, and it could be blatantly overheard or heard in the audio. But you've got two main issues here, right, from my perspective. Issue number one is nothing's going to happen here. Alan Muir is not going to... I would be very surprised if Alan Muir paid the price for this, because even the points that you highlighted and the things that he has done wrong in the past, Joe, I mean, the guy is, as referees go, it's not even the bias, you know, he's biased towards one club. It's the fact that he's a shit referee. And I mean, to put him in charge on a full-time basis of VAR and to then allow him make decisions like he made in that game against Hibernian, that's, to my mind, shambolic, you know? And so that's problem number one, that there's probably going to be no repercussions here and nothing's probably going to happen. I'd be very shocked if there would be. The other issue is the gutlessness of our board. And you have to ask yourself the question, what is it going to take for our board to speak up and grow a pair in situations like this? I don't know how much worse you can get than what Alan Muir did, but the fact that it's radio silence from Celtic Park, not even we know we're not like the Ibrox side where it's statement o'clock every time something goes wrong or something goes against them, but the fact that it's just radio silence, They've said absolutely
nothing. For making a noise. There's a time and a place for it.
There is. You know, I mean, you don't need to make a foaming at the mouth statement like they would, but you can make the point of saying that the observation was incorrect, that the whole thing was done incorrectly, that the decision should lie with the on-field referee and the on-field linesman. They should not be overruled by the VAR. All the things that we said in our blogs in the run-up to all of this, and before we ever heard the audio, you know. But, I mean, Colin put himself in a position where he had no choice but to, you know, let us all hear the audio. But at the same time, like you said, James, he obfuscated. He didn't take the opportunity to actually speak up on it. Maybe he didn't take the opportunity to speak up on it because they're considering Muir's position. I don't know, and that's not something he can talk about on a review show. But the fact of the matter is, like, Colm has previous for this. We remember when Colm became the head of refereeing and he had that big long interview back in the summertime there when he was talking about referees' allegiances and how he just completely skirted the issue in terms of referees' allegiances and how he made out that they're all honest guys and they're all doing their best and, you know, just towed the party line. And it's clear he's had to toe the party line. They've probably had to sit down and have a long discussion about how to handle this. And 9 times out of 10, it's ignore it and it'll go away with them. They don't actually face up to the issues. And I mean, that's chronic. In any other league or country, if something like that happened and it was made public, could you imagine if something like that was made public in the EPL? Could you imagine how that would go down in England? If a referee was overheard on audio saying that and coercing his assistant VAR into agreeing with his decision, I mean, that referee would be, he'd be gone now. There wouldn't be any conversation about it. And that's the difference between professional referees down in England to amateurs, even though this guy's a professional. I suppose if you say if he's full-time, he's not amateur, is he? If he's on a full-time basis, he's considered a professional, isn't he? So, and he's most likely probably going to be allowed to get away with this, which to me is just bonkers. It's nuts. What's even more bonkers is that our board is just, nothing to see here. Move along. We're not commenting on this. And their attitude is, we're 16 points ahead. What does it matter? But what happens? Let's just look at it from the perspective. What happens if the Ibrox club suddenly get their shit together next season and they start becoming competitive and these decisions start to mean a hell of a lot? What happens then? Where does our board speak out then? Or when do they start speaking out then? So, it's just, that's my main question. What in God's name is it going to take to get them to talk up, to grow a pair of balls and actually take this issue, you know, by the scruff of the neck and head on and deal, you know, and call it out for what it is, which is it's grossly unprofessional. That's exactly what it is. So, That's pretty much my take on it. But I don't see anything changing.
Does anybody know what the result on the VAR panel vote was?
I was 4-1 on that.
4-1. Yeah, somebody told me that. I was just trying to check that there on my phone. Somebody told me that the other day. So there was one person on the VAR review panel who also thought that wasn't a goal. And this is exactly what we've been saying about the VAR review panel. We can't trust the VAR review panel either, because there's always going to be at least one person on there who's operating to their own agenda. And Dundee United said as much in their statement when they pulled out of this. So again, that was a red flag right away that other clubs know this process isn't working and they know that they know there are issues with it. I mean, I think it's obvious that there are issues with it. But I think it's obvious that one of the issues is that there are just biased people serving on that panel, the same as there are officiating some of our games. For any person sitting on the review panel after a whole week of non-stop discussion about it and looking at every conceivable angle and recognising that there's no way to justify the decision, for somebody on the VAR review panel to actually justify the decision, it's bollocks. I'd love to know who that person is.
James, one other aspect in this is the other clubs involved. Hibs managed to get 3 points from that game against Celtic. Hibs, Aberdeen and Dundee United are involved in the battle for third place. If Celtic win the Scottish Cup, whoever's third I think I'm pretty certain whoever's third gets a Europa League playoff spot. So they get a chance to go into the Europa League. If they lose out in that, they drop into the Conference League, and that's worth about £5 million, which is a hell of a lot of percentage of turnover.
Absolutely, I think
Aberdeen and Hibs have turnover of between, I think maybe off the top of my head, £12 to £15 million. So getting into that league is worth £5 million. And it's a consequence of it, but Alan Muir's determination to deny Celtic a goal has a knock-on impact for Dundee United and also Aberdeen. But nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to ask questions about it.
People tend to overlook that when it comes to these decisions. If the decision isn't in a Glasgow derby, where it only affects the two clubs involved, there is another team that either loses out or benefits as a result of the decision. And the teams that are around them should be asking questions about that. You're right, and they never did. They never did. We're not the only club to blame for this. Absolutely, we're not. There are other clubs that should speak out and don't do it. I mean, that's a good point. That's something worth exploring, I think, a bit further.
The question is why? Why won't other clubs?
I'm going to explore some better lighting. Hang on.
Why? That's a good question. Why, Eric? Of course it is. Of course it is.
Yeah. I mean, I don't get it.
I don't know. You would think, right, that with the influx of foreign owners and whatnot in Scottish football, that some of them must look around and say, why is it like this?
Yeah.
Why do we allow it to be like this? I mean, because we have a strange, wee, weird, like, unique football environment here. But, you know, I mean, it's people talk about the SFA and the SPFL being the problem, but they forget that those organisations effectively are the clubs. Yeah. And it's the clubs who elect the people who sit on these committees and all that, and the clubs who allow this to happen. Man, I don't know why they do it. I genuinely don't. Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's worth exploring that further. That's definitely, definitely an issue you look at. Right. I get the feeling that we could discuss Mr. Muir all night long, but we have a couple of other things to get to. Earlier in the week, last week, the Celtic Way published an article about the Lowland League and about how Celtic were sitting top of the Lowland League, and Stephen McManus is on the brink of this big success. And it was basically a puff piece interview that was taken from Celtic TV interview. And it was designed to make it sound as if that progress is being made at the academy level, even though academy players are leaving for other clubs all the time and we can't get any of them to stay. I thought that the piece was pretty dreadful. and I wrote an article about it. And my contention in the article is that we are the best funded team in the Lowland League by a considerable distance. And being top of the Lowland League and maybe for the first time finishing the season top of the Lowland League doesn't anyway sound a lot like a success to me. It's the fifth tier in the Scottish game. Our academy players should be good enough to dominate that league every single year, you would think. And the fact that they're not is troubling in itself. But the fact that people are trying to claim it would be some great success when the B team's entire job, its entire reason for existing, is to graduate players good enough to play for the first team squad, and that hasn't happened in a long time, does not suggest success to me at all. And you guys know I've been banging my head against the wall on this subject for a long time. And that's why I'm going to pass it to Joe first, because Joe likewise has got very strong feelings on this, and Joe has been writing about this and talking about this for a long time as well. Floor is yours, sir.
I was going to pass it to Eric, but
No, on you go. We'll get back to you.
Okay, Eric, you go first. I'll pick up all the leftovers.
Look, there isn't a whole pile else that I can add to what James has said. I mean, from my perspective, it's the fifth tier. It is like it's the fifth tier of the league pyramid. You would expect, I mean, the fact that it us being top of it and us being in a position to win it is being considered a big achievement. It's not a big achievement. No. I mean, if we can't, we should, from when we actually commenced playing in the Lowland League, we should have been dominating it. We had players good enough who were, you know, who had the ability to be able to dominate the league. Now, whether that's down to coaching or whether it's down to, my personal belief is it's down to the environment. And the environment is so, so, like, as James said, you've got the B team, and the job of any B team is to search, you search for talent in your B team and bring that talent forward and bring it into your first team. Okay. Now, as you've highlighted many, many times, Joe, it's not happening. And you have the whole, you know, point that you make about Owen Moffat being the last player, you know, who really had a proper run out. So for me, the fact that we're not dominating that league and the fact that it's considered an achievement now that we're top of it is, without putting a too fine a point on it, it's bollocks. And like I said, or like I alluded to earlier on, I think the environment is part of the problem. If you're a skillful or decent level of player playing in a league of that level, I don't think it's the kind of environment where you can showcase your skills properly, because you're dealing with guys who are just hammer throwers, who are probably, you know, the only talent they have in their locker is to slide in and take fellas out of it. So I don't think it's a good environment to actually display your skill set. And it's certainly not an environment where you can develop your skill set.
Nope.
And if Stephen McManus is being hailed as some sort of, you know, genius for getting them to win the Lowland League, then something's radically wrong. Something is radically wrong. And that's clearly evidenced by the lack of progression, or the lack of a progression route for the players who were playing in the Lowland League to step up to the senior squad. And anybody who is anywhere near capable of stepping into the senior squad is just being plucked away. So Daniel Cummings is a perfect example. You know, we've all these guys that have moved on, Rocco Vata, like you said, Joe, on a show a few weeks back, I mean, they mightn't be getting first team games in the championship and all the time in England, but they're putting themselves in a very professional league and an opportunity to progress if they can break through to the first team. It's a hell of a lot better opportunity than it is playing in the Lowland League or just floating around the periphery at Celtic. And it's clear from what we've witnessed in the last few months or so that players aren't going to be, they're not going to be looked after. They're not going to be given contracts that are acceptable. They're not going to, they're not being incentivized to hang around. And there's other clubs from south of the border who are coming along and incentivizing them and offering them money that's enticing them down to there. So, yeah, I mean, I'm delighted. You know, if they win the Lowland League, that's great. But you won't see me writing any fucking big articles on it. And I don't think, I'd say you guys might write cursory articles on it, but it won't be to shower praise on the club and
very much do it.
Yeah, so look, I'll pass over to Joe. And Joe is very strong feelings on this, I know. So
yes, I know. Go for it,
Joe. First up, the Lowland League isn't the fifth tier, it's a joint fifth tier. So we've got the Highland League and we've got the Lowland League. The Lowland League started about 10, 15 years ago. All sorts of bizarre clubs like BSC. I think they're based somewhere in Glasgow, something sports club, and they play games at Alloa and God knows where. Cumbernauld Colts, Caledonian Braves, all these newfangled clubs. And below the Lowland League, I think it's the West of Scotland League, which has got far better teams. It's got teams like Clyde Bank, it's got Auchinleck Talbot. There's far better teams in the league below the Lowland League than there is in the Lowland League, but there's only one up, one down. I think the Lowland League's got 18 teams, so 17 of them, one will go into the playoffs, but the middle 16 teams will all be there again next season. I mean, there's even teams like Johnston Borough and Darvel that are out there that have thrown a bit of money, want to do things, but our players are not even getting the chance to play against them. So they're playing against guys that have got not a chance of getting There might be one a season goes up the way, but most of these guys playing the lower league is their level and their pinnacle. So initially I thought the lower league would be good for playing 16-year-olds and then getting them exposed to higher grade of football and then moving them on to get loans. But Celtic seem to have the B squad just seems to be on an island. It does its own thing. I think the crux of the matter is that playing in the UEFA Youth League, Celtic don't want embarrassed in that. So they've got a real determination to keep their best players. And I think what somebody in the squad this year was playing the UEFA Youth League for the third season running, which is pointless. Most of them were playing for the second season. I think Celtic had the oldest team in the UEFA Youth League. Well done. They got through their group and then they lost out to Salzburg on penalties after a one-each draw away in Austria. But they're determined to save face and put up a show in this UEFA Youth League. And because of that, Francis Turley played pre-season with the first team. He scored against Queen's Park. He was over in America. I think he might have got a 10-minute run out against Chelsea or something. And then to follow that up with a season in the Lowland League must be soul-destroying at best.
Yeah,
so he's lost at least a year in his career. If Francis Turley was so highly rated, he should have been out on loan to Ayr United, Partick Thistle, Queen's Park someday, and it would be sink or swim. They might make it, they might not make it, but playing in the Lowland League is a guarantee not to make it. And as Eric touched on, at the last AGM, I asked Michael Nicholson to name the last player to come through from the academy and start a first-team match. Nicholson didn't have a clue. I used to go to a lot of these matches. I wouldn't dream of going to watch them now. It's soul-destroying watching it. I don't know if there's anyone that's ever bought a season ticket to watch the Celtic B team playing in the plastic at Airdrie. But Owen Moffat, I think he'd made three appearances off the bench, started against St Mirren December 2021, played 62 minutes and hasn't been, and that was his last appearance for Celtic. Kelly and Vata got a few substitute appearances last season. There's two guys out in Austria just now. I suspect they're out of sight and out of mind. So they just seem to be trying to justify themselves, and putting up a decent showing in the UEFA Youth League allows them to pretend that they're making progress and they're amongst the European elite, when 90% of the players that are playing in the B team this season, they'll be playing in the Lowland League for BSC, Cumbernauld Colts and all the rest of them in 2 years' time. They will not be playing for the Celtic first team. The gap is getting bigger and bigger. It needs some out-of-the-box thinking. Dan O'Dea needs to find pathways. Johnny Kenny found a decent pathway at Shamrock Rovers. He's come back, and I don't think it's happening for him at Celtic. But there's a goalkeeper at Ayr United. I think Josh Clark, possibly. And Toby Oluwayami. I know how to spell it. I maybe don't know how to pronounce it. He's been in loan at Dunfermline this season, but I don't think they're coming back to Celtic next close season and chapping on the door. Sinisalo is in place and Schmeichel's there for another couple of seasons. A few years ago, we had a couple of good goalkeepers, Connor Hazard and Ross Doohan. Never worked out for them. So Callum McGregor came through, then Kieran Tierney, and I would be surprised if there's anyone currently in the Celtic Academy, and that's stretching down to under 12s, that is going to make it through into the first team. So while they keep on repeating things, it's going to have the same outcome. As the Celtic Way celebrated getting to top spot in the Lowland League at the weekend, they drew away to Berwick Rangers. So Berwick Rangers are another of the lost clubs that are filling up the Lowland League. Cowdenbeath went down, they're doing nothing. Albion Rovers went down, they're doing nothing. East Stirling went down, they don't have their own ground. They sold out First Park, they're doing nothing. And that's the sort of teams that our B team is playing against. So Good luck to any of the boys there. They know the script. They've seen the others. They've seen Moffat. They've seen Kelly. They've seen Vata. They know what's ahead of them. And I mention it now and then, but it's not really something that we want to turn to. But I don't know when the club's going to take any action on it. They're spending $10 million in Barrowfield, which was meant to be opening in December. I think we're in the middle of March and it's still not opened. But you can spend all the money you like on facilities, but playing the Lowland League and playing on artificial turf at Airdrie is not going to develop a single player. It'll be a miracle. It'll be against all odds if anyone comes through. So on that, I am jolly note. I'll pass the baton back to James.
No,
just a point there, actually. Sorry, no, to cut across. Plunge McNugget made a point there in the comments that he said, you know, Dermot Desmond could buy Shamrock Rovers, but I made the point that he does own Shamrock Rovers. Why can't our players be shipped out? Why can't Shamrock Rovers be a feeder club for these guys? The Airtricity Premier League it's a decent enough level in Ireland where they would be getting a hell of a lot better game time if they were playing in a league like that. And they would be getting exposure to Europe as well, as we saw with Johnny Kenny.
Our players are not good enough for the Airtricity League. They're not good enough. And the same last season when Duncan Ferguson came into Inverness Cali Thistle, it was documented, they phoned Brendan Rodgers. He would have thought, I know Brendan from Liverpool days, I'll get in touch with Brendan, I can get a few players on loan. And nobody from Celtic B team went and loaned to Inverness Cali Thistle. The players are not good enough. They would not get a game. Kenny was well advanced. He'd already played for Ireland under-19s. He'd already done well at Sligo Rovers.
Is that true?
Yeah, you've not heard the Duncan Ferguson story?
No, I have not.
No. As soon as he became manager of Inverness Cali Thistle, get in touch with Brendan Rodgers to see if we get players on loan. Rodgers confirmed that at some media conference made mention he'd spoke with Ferguson, but nobody from Celtic went and loaned to Inverness Cali Thistle because the players and the Celtic B team playing against Cowdenbeath, Albion Rovers, Berwick Rangers, BSC, Cumbernauld Colts, they are not ready for a dogfight in the Scottish Championship.
That's atrocious, man. Right there is the problem. We aspire to be a Champions League team, allegedly. I know the manager aspires for us to be a Champions League team. I don't know about other people at the club. But we've gone to Munich and got an outstanding result recently. And that's the level that we should be aiming at. And we're supposed to find a place in the first team squad for guys who are playing in the joint fifth tier. That's an unbridgeable gap. You don't go for Scotland's fifth tier to play in a Champions League team. It's just not going to happen. You're right. A miracle is exactly what it's going to take. Yeah. Somebody so good, by the way, the scouts at other clubs are going to spot him before our geniuses are selected.
Yeah, but it's like you were saying.
I haven't heard the Duncan Ferguson story.
It goes back to what we're talking about earlier on, and the board doing nothing about the whole situation, the whole refereeing situation. They just don't seem to want to deal with the core issues that we, as a club, are suffering from. But playing in the Lowland League is going to do nothing for the B team. Absolutely nothing. And the fact that there's no outside-the-box thinking of what we could possibly do, like something as simple as what you alluded to there about, you know, sending a few players out to Inverness Caledonian Thistle. But Joe's right. Joe's point is bang on. They're not good enough. They cannot be good enough if they're playing in the joint 50 year of Scottish football. They just can't. That's not an environment where they can thrive, which is what I said earlier on. They can't. And, you know, it's ridiculous that Dermot Desmond, our owner, owns a club in Ireland and that he hasn't got some sort of feeder, you know, situation going on there where players are allowed to go over there and try out to play in the Airtricity League or train in the Airtricity League and come up to a decent level, at least. Why are we not utilising, why is Dermot Desmond not utilising that resource? And why is the board not utilising that resource? I don't get it. But look, there's so many things I don't get about our board. Don't even get me started. No.
They're more interested in the lovely new deal with Adidas. Did you see some of that nice new kit? £90 for a top.
Yeah, it's just a rip-off of the Ireland away jersey.
Priorities.
From the 90s, you know?
Sell-out season tickets. The excess tickets for the Glasgow Derby, there's some, I think it's £53 and £56. I think it might even be tickets at £61 for it. That's the only interest. Getting your hands dirty and dealing with real football issues like refereeing matters, like the youth team, developing players, no interest whatsoever, none at all. We'll maybe return to this one in future, James. I think we might.
Yeah, indeed, mate. Indeed. I want to have a brief chat about the banner statement. As people are aware, the club released two statements last week about the supporters. The first about pyro, and the second about banners. Now, I agreed with the pyro statement wholeheartedly. This is now starting to cost us. I personally think that the SPFL sanction of 500 tickets for the next League Cup game at Hampden is a joke. I mean, it's a joke. The club will hardly even feel that. And to sanction Motherwell with the same punishment as the two Glasgow clubs got makes it even more ludicrous. Because as I said in the piece I wrote about it, Motherwell will just subtract that for the tickets they don't sell anyway. So they won't even feel it any more than we'll feel it. The idea that the next sanction will be 800 tickets sounds more severe, but I think it's just as laughable. The SPFL isn't really going to take this situation seriously. But Celtic is taking it seriously because Celtic is always taking it seriously. And so I agreed with her statement on that and agreed that it's time that the people who do this got a bit of a grip and realise that they're going to hurt the club. And they're going to hurt the club eventually in a way that is substantial. They do it again in Europe, for example, and we're going to have serious problems. But the statement on the banners, I did not like at all. I thought that was morally cowardly, in particular that they did not say which banners they had the problem with. But I wrote about this earlier in the week, and it can basically only be one of two. It's either the Israel banner or it's the Bic McFarlane tribute banner. And I think for the club to complain about either of them is pretty ludicrous, actually. I realise that there might be some of our fans who've gone to the club and complained to the club. I have sympathy with those people to an extent, but we don't live in a society where the minority gets to tell the majority what the majority can say and think and do. And I think for our club to complain about the Israel banner is nonsensical, since UEFA aren't even going to sanction us for that any longer. UEFA seems to have come to a realisation about the Israel situation, that their position is indefensible on it. I know there are people at UEFA who are debating whether Israel should continue to be a UEFA member. There is some talk about sanctioning them the way Russia was sanctioned after the invasion of Ukraine.
James,
oops.
Like
you're
breaking up.
Yeah,
James,
you're
breaking up.
We'll pick it up till James comes back, but no, he's spot on. If they're so incensed about the banners.
I don't know
what we happened. Lost you there, James. Yeah, just continue what you were saying.
That's all right. Israeli ministers are now in front of the International Criminal Court. There's an international arrest warrant for the Prime Minister. So the situation in Israel has come to the point where most of the world agrees that what's happening there is criminality bordering on the kind of criminality that people got taken away for and executed in Nuremberg. Not that I'm advocating that particular answer, but that's the level at which this thing is getting to. So UEFA's position on it, I think that people at UEFA have kind of come to a kind of quiet understanding about it, that clubs won't be sanctioned for their supporters protesting about this, because they really don't want to draw any more attention to this issue than they already have. The idea that any club is going to get sanctioned for protesting against Israel is completely ludicrous. And that's why Celtic, if this is what Celtic are complaining about, I don't think they've got a leg to stand on. The Irish complaint makes even less sense, because McFarlane's a controversial guy, let's face it, right? A lot of the Republican prisoners did some pretty heavy duty stuff. But all the sides involved in the conflict now recognise that it was a war. And in a war, you have a peace at the end of it. And the people who fought the war are the ones who get to dictate the terms of the peace. That's why the prisoners all got... That's why Some of them are sitting in the Parliament over there. That's why some of them have been elected to Westminster over the years. Again, I recognise that there are people who might not like that kind of tribute at Celtic Park. But I can only say, if you know your history, guys, if you know your history, you're not really, you don't really have a leg to stand on there either. I wrote in the piece that I put up about this, about Michael Davitt, and I see a lot of, like, when there's articles about Michael Davitt and his links with Celtic, I see a lot of dancing around it. But he was a member of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, which was the forerunner of the IRA. He did 7 years in jail for arms smuggling and various other things on behalf of the IRB. And he weighed the first sword of turf at Celtic Park. So our connection to Ireland and the independence, the cause of Irish independence and the War of Independence is set in stone. It's a fact of life at Celtic. And really, I just found that whole, I just found the suggestion that our fans did something wrong in either case to be pretty preposterous and pretty morally indefensible from the club. And what made it worse, of course, is that the club did not specify that it was either these two banners that were the issue. The club didn't specify if it had a problem with one banner or the other. It just put out the statement and let people make up their own minds, which is just hiding away, as far as I'm concerned, hiding away from the issue. If the club's got something to say and the club wants to have a go at the fans for something, they should be upfront about it rather than doing this ludicrous blowing smoke and people can draw their own conclusions what we're talking about. Well, I think whatever you're talking about is pretty ridiculous. So I'll let Eric first. You go for this first, mate. You can answer this.
Yeah, look, the whole thing reeked of being like it was a passive-aggressive statement.
That's how I saw it.
Yeah, it didn't tell us anything. And like you say, James, they should have had the guts to call out what banners they were criticising. But at the end of the day, the reason they didn't is that they probably know that there's no grounds for calling them out, you know? Like, the Green Brigade, whatever you want to say about them, they've been, and that banner, Show Israel the Red Card, that's kind of taken off. There's an awful lot of other clubs around the world that have taken that on board and started doing it. Shamrock Rovers being one of them in Ireland, you know? So it's becoming more and more...
We thank them for it.
Yeah. And it's becoming more and more evident that UEFA's position with regard to Israel is probably becoming untenable, and they are going to have to make a call on it sooner or later, because of it's just to be associated with Israel is just not going to be a good look for them anymore. So they're going to have to make a call on it sooner or later. It probably will happen before long. With regards to the other banner, again, this is our history. It's a big part of our history. And as you've said, and as you've clearly made very clear, and that was a very valid point, James, this was a war. It's been acknowledged as a war. And there were two sides in that war. And some guys who were involved in you know, a lot of guys who were involved in the side that Celtic is rooted in, should be celebrated. There should be no reason why they can't celebrate them. And all this faux outrage from the unionist guys over in the north. I mean, that was hilarious, you know, that we should be sanctioned for it and all this kind of carry on. It's a joke. You know, they have no problem celebrating their martyrs and doing it blatantly and, you know, in front of us. So why can't we celebrate ours? Put it that way. But that's neither here nor there. The point I'm making is that the board should have been just upfront and honest about what their issue was. But that was paying lip service to a section of the support who complained about those banners. That's all it was doing.
I'm more worried that it was paying lip service to a right-wing section of the media that, let's face it, hates us and will never give us a break if it can get away with it. And we'll find any excuse to have a go at Celtic and Celtic fans. And I mean, they've had the proper go as the royal chants and all that stuff, the Lizzie's in the box stuff. Yeah. Over the last couple of years, I mean, we're trying to appease unappeasable foes here. I don't understand why people don't recognize that that's a doomed strategy. you're not going to satisfy the editorial staff at the Scottish Daily Mail or the Scottish Daily Express. These people are better just being ignored.
But Merzouna's point there, I think our stand in Palestine is helping the brand, far from harming it. I don't see how it's not helping it. It's giving us, you know, worldwide, it's being picked up by media worldwide, it's being picked up, and everything that seems to be picked up on is being shown in a positive light. So the world is wise. The whole world is wised up now to Israel, and they know what they're about. And everybody who thinks or supports what they have done in any way, shape, or form just needs to go away and have a think for themselves, like, because these guys are just, they can't, you can't, there is no justification, there is no support for what they have done. There cannot be. So, but again, it's a subject we could talk about all night. I agree with you 100%. The board should have just been up front. But then again, this is now 3 points that we've made in this podcast about our board. We've made about how gutless they are when it comes to referee. We've made the point about how inactive they are in working to get our B team to a better level. And we just made the point about how gutless they are to actually call out. If they're going to call something out, be straight up about it. Call it out as it is and as you see it.
I'll round this off. It's well summed up there. It's a spineless board, and two aspects of this. Nobody at Celtic was prepared to put their name to this.
As well as not
naming the offensive naughty banners that really upset them in the director's box as he looked over. None of them were prepared to put their name to it, par for the course. And this is a telltale sign when Celtic are feared of something that they've done. There was nothing whatsoever on social media. They dare put that statement on Twitter. I remember when the current chairman got appointed, there wasn't a peep on Twitter about it. So it's a decent barometer. When the club know they're on shaky ground, when they're on thin ice, when they don't really fancy something they've come up with, you will not see it anywhere near. So happy birthday, this one, that one, the next one, and on this day and all the other crap that they put on social media. But something of substance, if they really believed in it, if Michael Nicholson or Peter Lowell had a backbone, they'd have put their name on it. They might even went on Celtic TV to explain it, and they'd have put it on social media. So those aspects were all missing. So, as usual, missing in action.
Ghosts don't have backbones, and Michael Nicholson is a ghost. Because we never see the guy. He's an apparition, you know.
Yeah, 100% agree, guys. Right, so last segment of the show tonight. We've got another game at the weekend, as every weekend, but this is the small matter of a Glasgow derby. And I particularly enjoyed Brendan's comments last night and Arne Engel's comments on it. Brendan was as calm as I have ever heard him, saying that that he knows what went wrong at Ibrox and that the players and him have discussed it in detail and he's no concerned. I thought his comment about they stole our game at Ibrox was particularly interesting. He's also talked about their European performances in the context of what happened at Ibrox and what he expects from them at Celtic Park, and that they try and play counter-attacking football. So they'll be happy to let us have the ball and they'll try, when they get it, to break up the park as quickly as they can. So he's not completely oblivious that something had to change a wee bit in our approach. He doesn't think that they play that differently under Ferguson than they did under Clement, and I completely agree with that. And I was therefore amazed to see Keith Jackson's piece this morning. Making out that there has been some radical transformation. None that I've seen suggests a radical transformation. I thought his tactics against Fenerbahce were almost identical to what you would have expected Clement to play. In fact, Clement did play very similar tactics in one of their later games in the Europa League group stages, so I really don't know what Jackson thinks he's seeing. But Rodgers has seen enough to think that they'll approach the game exactly the same way as he did at Ibrox, and he has a plan for dealing with it. Arne Engels, he refuses to treat it as anything other than just another game. It is nothing special, was his comment today, which I thought was about as dismissive as you could possibly get. This is just another 3 points, guys. It's just another step towards wrapping up the treble. So I'll ask you first, Joe, what do you think of the coming weekend? And how's Brendan going to handle it? And how are we going to do it differently than we did at Ibrox?
I thought Rodgers' comments were spot on. He barely paused for breath after beating Hibs, and he turned the agenda towards next Sunday. So that was good. I believe everything he said, that he'll have analysed it. But I don't think there's anything tactical about our approach. There were circumstances involved at Ibrox. Hatate and Taylor had complete stinkers, and that had quickly a knock-on effect on the rest of the players, and they were intimidated to an extent. And they also, was it a 13-point lead we went to at Ibrox? So there was a lot of factors involved in that. I don't think that we tailor our game in any way, because they've got some fantastic counter-attacking style of play. Not at all. We should be battering them to death. We should be hammering them from every angle. Their fullbacks are Jeff Day and Ridvan or Tav Penn. So our strengths are our wingers. On the right, we've got Johnson and Kuhn wanting to make up for Ibrox up against Jeff Day, the Chelsea target. We should be targeting that area morning, noon and night. And on the other side of the park, it's either Tav Penn or Ridvan Yilmaz, who got away with murder at Ibrox, the game of his life. We allowed him. He looked a superstar. But they've got nothing tactically special. They don't have a great midfield. Dessers is good. Dessers is apparently a superstar again. 6 weeks ago, Igamani was a superstar. I think it's 10 games. So there is nothing to worry about from them. They don't have a great tactical secret. They've not got a genius called Barry Ferguson in the dugout. It's up to Celtic to play their game. I thought we were fairly close to... I felt they were bubbling under on Sunday against Hibs. And if they just raise it a little notch, and I suspect that the 57,000 Celtic fans will ensure that happens on Sunday, they'll get tore right into them. And I don't see any let up in it. They've had a full week to prepare for Hibs. They've got a full week to prepare for this one. They should be very well prepared. We've sort of got Yang. I saw somebody suggest yesterday that Yang's girlfriend must have went back to South Korea during the week, because he was back to being Yang again yesterday. But Yang could be an effective substitute. Cherny is their only worthwhile player. He'd be a decent substitute for us. So I'm looking forward to Sunday. I'm looking forward to Brendan Rodgers. If he does to them what he did to Aberdeen in the semi-final after a bit of an upset, I'll be very happy. But confident that the manager has got the right approach, he's got the right mindset, and the players are Engels never knew about Celtic this time last year. I think it was only the 1st of September. He joined Celtic. He made his debut against them and probably never knew too much about it. So the youngest player in the squad, he put out some good quotes. He sent out the message. Hopefully there's complete silence from us this week. Nothing else is needed before Friday. And then they can have all their dramas and their excitement of Jose Mourinho coming to Ibrox and all the rest of it. But on Sunday, they're coming to our place. They might have 2,400 morons backing them, but it's up to the Celtic players. And I think they're well briefed, and they want to hand one out. So I'll pass to Eric to round this off.
Give me 1 second, right on that. One of the comments, Heavy Vibes, got it right. Wanny Ferguson's central tactics is going to be to send them out there just to kick us off the park. And I think if there is one absolute surefire certainty, it's a red card for one of their players in this game. Because I think the whole maim them as much as possible will be part of the strategy.
I alluded to that today in my article, in my early article, where I said that Baza's going to have them frothing at the mouth. As Marzuno says there, Barry's team talk, get into these, you know what, for the jersey. Yeah, that's going to be it. He's going to be absolutely frothing at the mouth, and he's going to send them out to maim and try and get away as much as they can. But yeah, I mean, first point I'll make anyway on the game is Jeffrey Schlupp has to start. No questions asked there. Because
that's a certain thing.
Joe alluded to the fact
as we talked about, that was one of the weak points.
Was a weak point. So you have Jeffrey Schlupp in that position. That's that position looked after and sewn up, and we don't have to worry about that. And I don't see, like, you're bang on when you say that nothing changed tactically. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Barry Ferguson has gone in there and he's looked at the tactics that Clement used, and he's maybe done slight tweaks, but he hasn't done a whole pile different. And that was very evident in the game against Fenerbahce. And you were talking about Keith Jackson. I did an article on his article this morning. And the point I made was, I love the assumption that they assume that the Fenerbahce tie is over. And this the fact is, like, there's an awful lot riding on this for Mourinho. Mourinho is going to be smarting after this, like, and he doesn't want to be made a complete twat of by somebody like Barry Ferguson. So they are going to come and they're going to go for it. So it's not going to be as straightforward. I do feel that the Ibrox side will beat them, but it's not going to be as straightforward as they think it's going to be. I think Fenerbahce will give them a game. So yes, if they win that, they'll be on a high when they come to us, and they'll be thinking they can beat us when they come to our patch because of what they've done to Fenerbahce. But I did make the point in today's article where I said Jose Mourinho and Brendan Rodgers are two completely different tactical concepts. Mm-hmm. Barry Ferguson, I think like Mourinho underestimated the Ibrox side, and he got caught with his pants down, and that's what happened there. Brendan Rodgers will not underestimate them, and he will have everything on the tactical side to a T. He'll have everything. He'll have every player knowing what their job is, knowing what they have to do. And like you've said, our wingers are far superior to their wingers. And if he decides to start with Maeda up front, Maeda is going to, he's going to cause mayhem in their defense. The only worry I would have, the only slight worry I would have, is if Czerny or Dessers get chances, one-on-one chances. We cannot allow that to happen. So, Dessers, he has been showing a clinical finish in the last few games that he's been playing. So we just don't want to be giving him or Czerny those chances. But as long as we do, as long as CCV does his job, and as long as Austin Trusty does his job, then there's no reason that we need to worry. But I don't fear anything from this. They're going to come out hammer throwers, United, like they will literally. Baza's just going to be, he's going to be, this is his mental breakdown game, you know, where he's just going to lose his shit inside in the Ibrox standing room. You know what I mean? And he's going to want it so bad that he's going to want them to go out there and hack down every Celtic player that they can. Yeah. And it's all about, you know, showing what we're made of and showing that we're not going to back down to these guys. But that's no good if you like it. You don't have a tactical. If Brendan is able to read his tactics inside out, we're just going to pick them off at ease. And I really, really, like, I had to laugh at Keith Jackson today. You know, he's putting himself in the shop window if he beats Fenerbahce and he beats Celtic. And I mean, this guy, like, it's a bromance between the two of them because they work together.
It really is. Yeah,
and he wants, desperately wants Baza to get the job full time. And you know something? I desperately, desperately, desperately want him to get it full time too.
Yeah, I know exactly.
You know, so, like, I'd love it if he got the job full time because he would be made an absolute mug of. But look, that's wishful thinking on my behalf, because these guys, if these American guys are serious, they're not going to consider that, regardless of what he does.
I don't know, because as I said in the piece this morning, I think I said last week as well on here, if they come in right and if they have to spend a bunch of money when they come in and they see a management team that has some rapport with the fans, and has some backing in certain sections of the media. And there's a lot of talk around the press about wait till these guys get their own team in place and wait till they've got a summer under the belt. I think there is a sort of an outside chance that this could happen, and that we could be dreaming about this all summer long. That this will be what we're looking forward to in the coming season. Seeing wee Baz's head joining all the others and Brendan's wall.
Well, not just Baz's head, all the four bears all together. You know.
One point in this, spare a thought for Derek McInnes. Derek McInnes was a feature of very similar articles by Keith Jackson about how the perfect manager was just down the M77 and all needed to do. But I think Keith's a bit of a flirt now that Barry Ferguson's in place. Keith is all over him. So fingers crossed that Keith still has influence in the Blue Room and Barry gets a job.
Definitely.
Right, I think we can end on that note, guys.
Predictions, guys. I'd say 4-1. They're going to score a goal, but I'd say 4-1.
Well, I'm going to Poland next Monday. And so I was talking to my mate about this yesterday on the bus, and he said, set yourself a Jimmy Johnson in Belgrade type line to cross, right? That you don't go to the pub unless the result reaches a certain level. I suspect I'll be in the pub because I think it'll be comfortable, very comfortable.
You won't put a number on it.
Well, 3 or higher, I'm going to the pub. 3 clear goals or more, I'm in the pub. So I suspect I'll be in the pub.
I suspect you will as well. I would think 3-0, a standard SPFL scoreline.
Yeah. Like we've been doing all season, Joe. Yeah.
Right, guys, I want to say thanks to my 2 colleagues tonight and to everybody who's watched this show. If you guys like what we do, then you know what to do. You need to subscribe, and you need to get everybody you know to subscribe. If you have to beg, borrow, and steal subscriptions from people, please get us to the 1,000 this week. I'm sure we'll hit the 1,000 next week anyway, because we'll have a lot to talk about in the aftermath of this one. I'll pass this to Eric, because Eric knows all the technical details I don't.
Yeah, well,
we had a little bit
less on the live stream tonight. We had we maxed it out at 70, but I expected that because it's Monday evening. But there wasn't really any point in doing a podcast directly after the game yesterday. Too many people would have been at the game and out celebrating afterwards and going to the pub and whatnot and traveling back. So timing probably wouldn't have been great. Monday evening probably isn't the best. It's probably not the best, but we have to work around the game and the schedules of the games. So yeah, folks, look, like, subscribe, click the bell, and just keep supporting us if you like us. We seem to have a hardcore, which is building up nicely. And Plunge McNugget, I've seen Plunge McNugget on an Axon, so we've got a defector, guys. So I'm sure he'll go back to Axon too. But anyway, it's good to see an Axon follower on our podcast. But yeah, folks, just keep following us if you like what we're doing, and we'll keep the content coming. And this is only the beginning for the Trinity Tims. We expect over time it's going to get bigger and better. And so just watch the spaces and see what happens down the line as we get bigger.
Thanks very much, guys. And join us again next week. I don't think we're doing a live show next week, or we're going to do a recorded one on Monday morning. The 3 years will be hungover, so you might need to bear with us a wee bit on that.
Yeah, you might have some bulging eyes and red faces and stuff. So until then, guys, we will all talk again on Monday. Take it easy.
Heel.